Hello and welcome to the Streamcast, your one-stop shop for everything gaming, and this is the industry news. Today we'll be discussing Ubisoft's foray into AI, E3 woes. This is your wrap-up. I'm Blackamora and I'm joined by Hali Hassan. I don't know which one we're going with now.
Both. Like, I'm going to just start accruing more names. So by the end of the month or the year, we're going to have like the whole episode just be my names. That's the aim.
That's the episode. But yeah, we are going to cover the latest gaming news in the industry, stuff that you're not seeing covered elsewhere. Ubisoft have commissioned AI to help them write in scripts. Now, Hassan, could you go into a little bit more detail for us?
Yeah, to kind of start with, I need to explain what bugs are in gaming. Bugs are a kind of catch-all term for the dialogue that NPCs just kind of say when they're moving around the world and kind of interacting with each other. The grunts and the, like, anything that isn't like core dialogue is grunts, basically. Like, you know, just the, when two NPCs just bump into each other in the road and they're like, hello, how are the cabbages? I was enjoying the forest today. Goodbye. Like that. Yeah. In the box. Like, in the same way, like, you know, just the forest noises and the ambience and like the crinkles and that kind of stuff. Ubisoft have put together the idea to build this ghostwriter to streamline how books are written and to take the pressure off of writers, because like that's a lot of work and it is like fairly like mundane work to kind of spend a lot of time doing. Like, I guess it's not like what people really want to kind of like creatively spend their time on. And that makes sense to me. Like, that's totally fine. It's just AI is kind of, it's a loaded gun kind of at the moment in the tech scene because of how it's being used to kind of steal work and to kind of make people and their jobs obsolete at this point. There's a lot bad being done with AI, but it doesn't seem like it is in this case. Like, Ubisoft put out a newsletter called The Convergence of AI and Creativity by Ben Swanson, and he did a GDC talk, and he was talking about how none of the inputs into this AI are going to be just from the internet at large. It's going to be all in-house, which is a fantastic stance to have. So they're not going to just be stealing writing willy-nilly. It's going to be directly inputted, like, stuff, written work. So in a double-pronged good thing, A, it's going to be work that they own, so they're not taking anyone's ownership. And B, it's going to also teach the AI the Ubisoft language, because that team of writers have, like, a particular flair to write in a specific way, and that's going to sound more genuine in that world that they're creating. So that's good. That's really good. So, like, because it would be quite jarring to, like, imagine picking up a novel and be like, oh, this is Brandon Sanderson, and now suddenly this is Terry Pratchett. Like, it would make...
Yeah. It'd be a bit jarring.
But yeah, like, the idea and the tech, there's a genuine, like, good thing that could be done here. Like, it could also be, like, I've seen some takes online where people are like, you could, with the money you're spending on the ghostwriter, you could hire more staff. And other people who are like, more people, there's like more cooks for the broth. So it's kind of up in the air. And like, so as someone who isn't a writer in gaming, this is definitely one of those stories that I'm fascinated by, and I'm hopeful that there's going to be a middle ground somewhere we can kind of find to use the tool to help the people who are doing the job.
Yeah, I think that's the sweet spot. And as you said, I think a writer is probably the best positioned person to speak on this. I get why they are developing this. So it's to make sure that the actual writers on the game focus on the main dialogue, and I guess they are of the expectation or the assumption that people don't really pay attention to the background, you know, conversations. So like people in GTA, when they, you know, get into a fight or you bump into someone in GTA, like you're not really paying attention to what they're saying. You're just loading up the Glock, right? So I get it. I get it. And definitely from Ben Swanson, who seems to have created this ghostwriter, he has phrased it in a way that this is going to work with the writers as opposed to take away jobs from the writers. So that sounds cool. It seems like there will be somewhat of a back and forth, or, you know, it seems like there will be a, like, an infinite
potential
of, human writers and then the AI working together to build a complete script, a complete world in the games that they develop. But I do kind of think that this would be better used on people, maybe people who don't have as much experience and wouldn't command as much of a fee to get into writing those dialogue, because it's still writing, it's still dialogue, so it's still worthwhile experience. And I get why someone who maybe wrote the script for Wulong Fallen Dynasty, for example, wouldn't want to do background chatter for, you know, Watch Dogs maybe 4. I mean, if we go to what Alana Pierce said, who writes for Sony Santa Monica, she was involved in God of War Ragnarok. As a writer, having to edit AI-generated scripts / dialogue sounds far more time-consuming than just writing my own temp lines. I would far prefer AAA studios use whatever budget it costs to make tools like this to instead hire more writers. And that's coming from a writer themselves. So yes, you do have the problem of more cooks spoil the broth, because everyone wants to get their stuff in and be able to be like, hey, I put that in, I put that in. But perhaps the people who are going to be doing the work, perhaps they should have the heaviest stance or the heaviest say on this as a concept and as an act going forward.
Exactly. My only concern, right, is the problem with technology, right? It's not really a problem per se. It's just once you've like let the lightning out of the bottle, it's there and it's unavoidable. Like AI isn't going anywhere. Like it's going to be refined, it's going to be used. And for every time it's used well, there's a million opportunities for this to be abused. We've already seen with the image generation AI tools that like are straight up stealing people's work. This is something I didn't know, and a mate put me onto it online. They were kind of showing me like how egregious a lot of the tools were for like scouring the internet and taking people's content without their permission, or just removing their ownership and their own things. And I'm worried about that becoming more commonplace in the gaming industry, because as we've seen a lot, gaming is very kind of behind the curve on regulation and legislation. It really feels like the Wild West. There is so much kind of egregious behavior that just happens because no one is there to stop or check it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the games industry is kind of prescient enough to stop this before it gets out of hand, because it can quickly get out of hand. That's my worry.
I agree with that. And there are several instances where gaming has been able to get away with a lot because people aren't hip. Right, because people aren't hip to it as they are with TV and film. Although it should be looked just as, you know, profitable, lucrative, maybe even more so. So yeah, there is still going to be a lot of regulation that needs to come in with that if they're going to run it. I think the simple solution is to just get inexperienced. When I say inexperienced, I don't mean untalented. Junior, there we go, junior. Like, I don't mean untalented. I mean people who still have a dedication to writing. Storytelling is by far, I think, the currency of entertainment. junior writers, you could just hire them and get them trained up in the way. Hopefully we get some, I mean, in an ideal world, we had something where you'd get junior writers in to do background dialogue and they'd level up to senior writers or whatever. Mm. But future games, they can go off and do whatever they want, because I'm sure a lot of writers would like to just write their own stuff, whether it's a film, game, TV shows. So maybe that would be a better use of this money as opposed to developing an AI tool. Mm. Also, there's only so much that AI can do, because I've seen a lot of content where AI tries to write a script for this show and they're never good.
Okay, they're surreal. They are surreal and they look very funny. I would watch the hell out of any of those shows.
I don't agree. I've never been impressed by any of those videos where it's like they've had AI, you know, write a script for a show. It's just like, this isn't good. So I'm sure that Ubisoft has the money and the desire to make theirs look good. I don't know. I know I don't want it, but I don't know if they can convince me otherwise and convince, you know, the doubters otherwise that this can be good, this can be beneficial and profitable and for the benefit of people, of workers. All right, we'll leave that one there. So make sure you get in the comments and let us know how you feel about AI potentially writing the script for your next favorite game. And it won't be the main dialogue, this will be background chat. So do you mind? Do you care about NPC dialogue? Let's know.
I just want to replay Oblivion. That's the best background character dialogue in any game ever. Hands down.
Speaking of Oblivion, E3 has passed.
King of segues.
E3 is out of here. They have taken, we're going to call it a professional hiatus, but unlike, you know, some of our favorite manga, Hunter x Hunter and One Piece, I don't reckon they'll be back. E3 has come out and said they are not putting on the showcase this year. And Jeff Keighley then went on to say, Summer Games Fest is back though. Hey.
it's like, you know, you've like, someone's left a relationship. And like that's the person that slid in their DMs the moment they posted on like on Twitter or something. mm-hmm.
If they have any manners of decorum, they'll wait a week or two. But you can still do the maths.
I'm not here for that. I'm here for it to be messy. This is hilarious.
Yeah, this was an entire mess of a situation, and really, this story goes back 3 years. I'd like to say, because Sony were, I think, the first notable partner to put out of E3 and make a stance. They went on record and said, we're not doing E3. And I think from there, you could slowly see the wheels falling off this freewheel vehicle. And E3 was still chugging along with Microsoft and Nintendo. And at that point, I felt like Nintendo and Microsoft were doing pity party partnerships at that point. I felt like they could see the writing on the wall, but they were like, okay, we won't do you like Sony did you. Not this year, at least. So I think in 2020 and 2021, did they take a break in 21?
Yeah, I think 2021 was the year that it was online only. Then no 2022.
Yeah, 2022 got cancelled. Yes.
This was the year that was meant to kind of come back.
And then 2020 cancelled. And then 21, it was the online-only event. Last year was cancelled. Is this the final nail in the coffin, Hassan?
I think it might be the death knell, because Jeff Keighley is standing on the coffin, seriously hammering in the nails. It's kind of been on the cards for a while now. I don't think anyone is really surprised, because like a lot of the issues with this E3 are kind of, they're not a surprise. They're kind of the slow decay of what the event was and kind of the trust that people had kind of going to the event. There's one of the big things like that stopped this event was no one confirmed they were really going. Yeah. And like everyone was waiting for someone else to be like, we're the first people, we're gonna say we're gonna go, right? The vote of confidence. And no one said
it. If you man do it, I'll do it.
Yeah, literally, because like you gotta remember, it's a super expensive thing to do. Yeah. Like not just monetarily, but like time wise, because they gotta like make trailers, they gotta make playable demos and those kind of things. They gotta like get the vertical slice of the game to show up. Like that takes a lot of time, that takes a lot of effort, and it takes money to then set up the booths, to pay people to come in and do the work and be at the event and that kind of stuff, and like the logistical side of it, and also like the hotels and everything else. It's a big ask, and like because no one was confident what was going on, no one was the one that took the leap. And like you got to remember, they had like Readbot, the guys who do the PAX events, and like they do Comic-Con here, right, as well.
Yeah, and EGX.
Yeah. Like Readpop are the guys like for conventions. So if they couldn't make it work, it wasn't gonna work. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, because E3 is like a staple. It was one of those things that, you know, growing up, it was like I wanted to go to E3. It was like a big part of like why I kind of started to get fascinated by industry news and kind of seeing like how the sausage was made gaming wise, because like it's more than just the story that we play, right? But like now seeing companies and especially indie and smaller kind of niches do their own shows and cater to their own audiences, I'm like, maybe this is the evolution that we need, because as much as E3 was this like juggernaut, it didn't cater to everyone. It was an industry event for the few, for the most part. There were like indie events, there were smaller stuff in E3, but it was really for the big guys. It was the Activision Blizzards, the EAs, the Microsofts, right? And that's fine, because I do play those games, right? I don't want to be like an indie elitist, be like, but like it's nice to kind of see that the online space kind of gives people the ability to curate spaces for those niches. And if E3 is the thing that sacrificed to do it, then I guess so. The other side of that is as well, Jeff Keighley is hoovering up everything that was E3, and he has been doing for some time. And like, I really feel like there's going to be, in a few years, the story is going to break why Jeff Keighley hates E3. And we're going to like kind of go, oh, okay, cool, right? So he does like the play days where it's like what E3 used to be. It is an absolutely industry-focused event. It's a small thing, but people come who are in the industry, who are journalists and those kind of things, and they come, they talk games. They have their meetings. They get shit done. It's a very small, contained thing. You go there to work. It's not an entertainment thing.
Yeah.
In the way that E3 kind of became. And I think because that's there, and again, like people have confirmed they're going to that, like Bandai Namco and I think a few other people. There's an IGN article where they kind of had a list of the few of them. I'll hunt that down at some point. But yeah, so it's like, he's got the vote of confidence. He's got the like everything set up, and he's got Summer Game Fest. So it's
yeah. It's a lot, really. He also has the Game Awards, which is very successful. Summer Games Fest. I felt that was the turn when Jeff was like, "Okay, we're gonna make sure that we are the June showcase." There's not just one thing we can attribute this closure to, and I personally think if E3 does not rebrand, they will end up like Blockbuster. There's not really a way back for them, and it's sad because, like you, I grew up kind of idolizing E3. Oh, this thing is really cool, but over time, that ceased to be important. The entire concept and the way E3 is delivered doesn't work nowadays. In this day and age, it just doesn't work. You've got what, 3 days, 4 days? I mean, I'm sure they could do 7 days if they wanted to, of just solid gameplay, showcases, trailers. You got industry personnel, you got entertainment superstars. That doesn't work nowadays because people just want to see everything on their phone and then go back to work, or you know, they want to take things up on the go. And honestly, Nintendo Directs and State of Plays, specifically the Directs, you can even class the indie worlds in that, they've pretty much delivered the better alternative nowadays. That is much more of a threat to E3 than the Summer Games Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the writing was on the wall when Sony pulled out 3 years ago. And it kind of felt like it was this unspoken nod of agreement that Nintendo and Microsoft were like, yeah, we got to cut. We're not going to cut straight away. We're going to give you this pity partnership.
you got to remember, right? Like, we take the piss out of Jeff Keighley's Twitter behavior, which is very funny. I love it. It's just, the corpse wasn't even cold before he posted up that tweet. It was amazing. 10 out of 10. Comedic timing on point. Oh, but like, Microsoft, chef kiss, the brass balls, right? They didn't just go, we're going to set up on the day, we're going to set up across the street from you lot. Literally, the Microsoft, like you know, their
the
thing
developer kind of direct.
In tandem with like E3. It's not in the E3 venue, it's across the road in Microsoft's venue. On the day, it's hilarious.
That's not an accident. That is not an accident. I'm sorry. The cynic in me cannot believe that is a coincidence.
And they've been doing this for years. And I'm like, golf claps. That is just chef kiss petty. It's beautiful.
Very petty. I wonder if there is going to be some sort of news breaking like you alluded to earlier. Because it now kind of comes across that everyone's got this silent beef with E3, but it's unprofessional to kind of speak out about it. I'd like to know that.
Is there anything? Jason Schreier? I was going to say, Jason Schreier, this is completely your wheelhouse to break these kind of stories. If you've got something in the works, I absolutely want to read it. Also, if you want to come on the podcast,
open invite. Let's go. I was going to ask you, do you think there was anything that E3 could have done to prevent this?
No, not this year anyway. It's way too little, way too late. The problem was, like, for the most part, they didn't acknowledge the issues and they started to kind of move away from what the industry needed it to be. And again, because they needed to make money to kind of make it a viable thing, that's fair enough. I get that. But because there's like this disparity between the industry event people who are coming there to have meetings to kind of make work happen, and to also show off their stuff to other people in the industry or to press, weren't getting that because it was kind of being sidelined by the general public kind of being brought in. Like, there had to be a break there somewhere, right? Yeah. And it's like, do you do a separate event for like the press? Do you do a separate professional event with a public event? Is that the pivot? Because that may have been the pivot. It's like, say you get the press in first and then you have the general reveal or something like that. But because it's like year after year after year of people making the same complaints, and because year after year after year, everyone else is doing their own thing better and serving those niches better, I don't think there was anything they could do. Like, it was too little, too late.
Yeah. I think you are bang on. I think back in 2020, everyone understood because of lockdown. And that's really when they should have been getting into work mode and re-strategizing. We should have been seeing a completely different E3 if they wanted to thrive in this era. And they didn't do that. They kind of just wanted to do the same thing, which, sure, that's your expertise, but that's not what the people want now. Because E3, back in the noughties, we would see PlayStation and Capcom and Nintendo and Bethesda. But now they can just do that themselves with these 15, 20 minute showcases, which are going to target their niche fans much better than an E3 is, because a collective, you're going to lose interest. I think the only thing they could have done is either, you know, mix it up with a gimmick, try to strike a deal with Evo, but before Sony bought them out, because then you have a reason for it to exist. You have people for, you have a reason for people to fly out to attend, to want to cover that event. Or if they could hold a mid-year games awards, I don't know how that would work. That would work as well, because the game awards works very similarly to how E3 does, but because of the gimmick of awards and people getting their flowers, that's a completely different event that people are willing to stay up for and catch the whole event. E3 alone isn't enough to survive in this era. And I don't think it can work because of how instant this generation is in terms of their needs, their wants. And now the technology is there to match that.
Absolutely. When E3 was like pivoting towards like talking heads and like people from YouTube and from Twitch and that kind of stuff, if they had said in 2020, when COVID hit, we're going to do this completely online, and we're going to integrate these people who were incredibly awkward on the stage, because that isn't a setting, that's not what they're trained to do. Like, that, at a, like, people who are good presenters, that is an amazing skill, and it is absolutely a skill that's like worked on, right? You can't expect just anyone to be able to do that. Like, it takes work to be able to do it. I couldn't do it. If E3 said, Hassan, come on stage and present this game, I would say no, because like, I don't know what I'm doing.
First of all, they'd come to me and I'd say yes.
We all enjoyed the cringe compilations, but like, it is also like unfair to kind of expect that level of skill and kind of like presentation from people who aren't trained in that. If they had said, these people, do it on Twitch, do it on your platform of choice, do it the place where you're comfortable, and we start catering to the crowds that you draw in, because those are the people we're trying to leverage by bringing you here, the event would have stayed and had like staying power in a different way, and it would have evolved into a new way, into a way that this current generation is really looking to be served in, and is being served better by things like Black Voices in Gaming and the Cozy Games Awards.
Shout out Black Voices in Gaming.
Yeah.
I love all of those guys.
The best, Destiny, the actual best.
Destiny's dope. Yeah, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're absolutely right. We'll shout them out as much as possible. Like, but yeah, it's a crying shame. It's too little too late. I think they could come back at some point, probably. Like, I don't think the ESA has anything to lose from trying to make this viable again. It's just, if they go in like half-cocked and try and do like recapture the glory from yesteryear, they're gonna have the same situation happen over and over again.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is always an open door, because no one really knows about the future. No one really knows how things are gonna go. No one knows what, you know, piece of content, what idea is going to yield the most success. So there is always that opportunity for E3 to come back in a big way, but I think it definitely needs to be intentional. As you said, it can't be half-cocked. It has to be intentional. I think they need some serious consultants on every level, industry people, creators, because they need to essentially marry the interests of people developing games and the people who are going to enjoy those games. If they can't do that, then, you know, it might just have to be, we enjoy these state of plays and these Capcom showcases. Summer Games Fest, I don't know if they know it, but they have the same issue, because I think this is going to be their third year running, and I was not impressed by either year of their, you know, showcase, their presentation, their rollout strategy, because it has exactly the same format as E3, but it's online, which doesn't work. Again, I think there's a lot of integration you could do with when it comes to like people on stage. If that is a problem, you can have like them do promo speech classes, but I think that is a very small problem in the big issue of people don't want to sit for 3 hours to potentially get a game trailer for a game that they have been waiting for 4 years.
True. Saying that though, when Jeff Keighley came out with the Gotham game that came out last year, with all the vigor, sprinted out, Batman's dead. That'll live in my mind rent free forever. Like he was excited. He was.
You know what? Jeff has his strengths.
Comedic timing, delivery. Yes.
I personally will never forget when The Rock came on Summer Games Fest to talk about Black Adam, not a game. that movie bombed. But you know, it's not about The Rock, and it's not about mediums that aren't gaming.
I'll say a lot like about like the pacing of some of these events, but like I gotta give it to like Jeff Keighley. Like he built this stuff from the ground up, and he knows how to kind of do the business side of things, like making sure like the kind of the money is rolling in and doing these kind of spots. Like I wouldn't know how to begin to get to do these things, and like it's a funny little thing we can kind of point at, but like it doesn't impact most of it. Like if it was every other segment, it would be like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. I will say the way you quite rightly pointed out that presenting, it takes a lot of skill. I also think being a competent business person takes a lot of skill.
Okay.
Rates and being able to say no. Negotiations, being able to separate personal and business matters. It takes a lot of skill. Jeff definitely needs to be complimented for that. I don't think I've ever complimented him on record, so I will go on and say that.
That's my influence. I'm making you a more balanced person.
I don't like it. But I mean, to your point, I think the Game Awards are perfectly paced because you had Hozier doing a musical number and you had someone else doing a musical number, I think related to Diablo, and it didn't ever feel like, oh, what the hell, get to the awards. It felt like a really nice change of pace. So yeah, if there is anyone that I feel that can do an in-person convention a la E3, it would be Jeff with Summer Games Fest, ironically. But I do still think that he faces a lot of the same problems that E3 does, in that people don't want to just sit around for hours each day.
Yeah, true.
Let us know in the comments what you think. Did E3 play their cards too slowly? Do you think there's still a chance for them to come back and storm the industry? Let us know as we wrap up the wrap up.
I was like, are you going to make the joke? I'll make the joke.
You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, streamcast_. Subscribe on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/streamcast. Subscribe if you haven't already. And you could see more content like the WWE 2K stuff. Tap that bell, set it to all so you get all our videos as soon as they go out. twitch.tv/streamcast TV, where you can see myself, Halle, and Akira. And we are also on every podcasting platform that you need to know. So make sure you search us on your favorite one and follow. We've got a website as well, thestreamcast.co.uk, for more great information about us. But until next time, take care of yourselves and your loved ones. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.